Talking about young adulthood, the mystery generation. So, all right, let me pray for us and for our time together this morning. God, thank you for family camp. Thank you for the week that we get to spend in this place and just to be surrounded by your beauty and by your people. And so, God, I pray that in this next hour or so that you would just bless our time together. Lord, that you'd give me the right words to say and in the questions that are asked. And, Lord, that this would just be a time where we can better understand how to love young adults and where they're at and how to best point them to you. And so we love you and trust you. It's in your name we pray. Amen. A little bit about myself. I have been serving at Mount Hermon since 2008. I grew up coming to family camp, though, and so I grew up going to child care and then day camp. I still have all of my lanyards and know all my day camp counselors' names. Went through the youth program when the field house wasn't built, but it was the blue and white tent. That was my high school years. And then continued to come to family camp. My family still comes. They'll be here week four. And went through the young adult program here as well. And then started on summer staff after I graduated from college. And so I've spent 3 summers on summer staff, including 2 intern years, part of the intern program here at Mount Hermon. I worked at Point Loma for a stint as the assistant resident director. So I worked with college students at Point Loma, and then have been here since 2011 as the assistant director and then the director for the last 3 years for youth ministry. So I am surrounded by young adults all of the time. And over the course of the years that I've been here, it's been really fun to see campers who I met when they were in junior high as campers here, and now they are on summer staff. And so getting to serve with them makes me feel very old. But I love seeing their transition through the junior high school, now college, and young adult years. And even some of them are now youth pastors in the Bay Area who are bringing their students to camp. So I'm surrounded by young adults, and I'm by no means an expert on this, more of just what I've seen, what I've learned in the years that I've spent really studying junior high and high school development, as well as young adult development, because they're really the ones that I interact with the most on a day-to-day basis as they're serving with students. I'm not a parent, and so I don't necessarily have the parent perspective of what is needed for having a child who is of young adult age. I can draw from my own experience as a young adult relating with my parents. I can see from that perspective, but I don't yet have the parent perspective. And I say that to parents often whenever I'm talking with them about their student who's here, their summer staffer, of saying, I spend a week with them, sometimes 2 weeks, and then they go home to you. And so I don't know what it's like to live with them on a day-to-day basis. So my hope in this time together, I probably won't say anything that's earth-shattering new to anyone, but my hope is that it sets up conversations that you continue to have with either your own young adult child, or if you're a young adult, a conversation for you to have with your parents, but to just really set up good conversations for people to have together after our time. So. In looking at the young adult, someone asked a great question earlier of what are the ages of young adulthood, and that is the mystery question of at what point does young adulthood start, and then at what point does it end, and you're now just a full-fledged adult. And that's part of the confusion of it, is no one really knows what that age is, and culture has a lot of the power in declaring when that is. And so, sorry, this microphone is giving me some trouble. So we're gonna look at that, but to look first at what are the generations, the current young adult generation is the millennials, as well as the early stages of the Gen Zers. And so to look at what has shaped those two very large generations, to look at first at, we have the boomers, who post-World War II, they experienced the Cold War, the hippie movement, the boomers, and then to the Gen Xers. The Gen Xers were anyone who's born 65 to 79, the Gen X. And one of the defining things of this generation is that they feel somewhat lost between the two really big generations right now, the boomers and then the millennials. Gen X is somewhat tied kind of in the middle. And they experienced the end of the Cold War, so that shaped them, the rise of personal computing, and then recognizing that the two main generations on either side of them are the largest right now. That then leads to the millennials. So millennials are anyone who's born between 80 to 94. And so they're somewhat considered Gen Y, because of Gen X to Gen Y to then Gen Z, but the more commonly used phrase is the millennials. A few of the things that are most apparent for the millennials is that they experienced the Great Recession, so seeing the economy in crisis, the technological explosion of the internet and social media, and then 9/11. And what's interesting is that this upcoming election in the next year or so is gonna be the first pool of voters who were not born when 9/11 happened. And so the political mindset and the shift of their view of the world is very different than the millennials who experience and have can point to where they were when 9/11 happened and how that's really shaped their understanding of the world. And so for millennials, they are entering the workforce. It's anyone born, again, 80 to 94. So their age range right now is 25 to 39. And so they're on like the later end of young adulthood, trying to enter adulthood. And in that age range, they are starting to, the younger of the millennials, adopt a little bit more of the Gen Z mindset. And that's the same for any of the generations. And so millennials, that's a pretty big term. There's many older millennials who are like, I do not relate to being a millennial. I don't have an Instagram. I'm not like super, you know, Facebook savvy. But then the younger millennials experienced it in high school and are very well versed in it. So millennials are often broken into two categories because of a very distinct shift of how much social media played into their development. And then we have the Gen Zers. So they're anyone who's born between 95 to 2015. So they're in a really broad age range right now of age 4 to 24. And so they're in like the young adult stage. It's the older end of the Gen Zers. For them, they are on their, on average, a Gen Zer received their first mobile phone at the age of 10. And many of them grew up playing on their parents' phones and tablets. They have grown up in a very hyper-connected world. So their view of the world is very different because of just the accessibility to information, to feeling connected to what's going on the other side of the world, even though you've never seen it, but feel connected to it. They are very, very connected to each other. And on average, they spend at least 3 hours a day on a mobile device. I think that's probably actually higher than just 3 hours a day, but on average. Some of the shaping events for Gen Zers is, again, smartphones, social media. They have never known a country not at war, just based on what's currently going on in current events. And they have seen the financial struggles of their parents, the Gen Xers. And so actually, Gen Zers are anticipated to be much more financially savvy because they've seen the effects of finances and they're actually being a little bit smarter in how they use their finances. That's something that's kind of on the rise since some of them are only 4 years old. But on average. One of the things that's really interesting about millennials as well and then starting to be adopted with Gen Zers and is one of the trends, and I talked quite a bit with a parent last week when after the seminar, and they have grown up in a world where there is a lot of choice, and there's always something better on the horizon. And so there's a general trend, and stereotypically, of a lack of perseverance in millennials and Gen Zers, because it's, I'm gonna have this job for about 2 years, and then I'm gonna switch careers and have a job over here for maybe a couple years, and then I'm gonna switch again. There isn't as many there's not a trend of staying it out in the long-term career in one place. It's a little bit more of kind of hopping as you go, working your way up the ladder. So that trend of having a lack of perseverance and when something gets tough, kind of giving up, that plays itself out in a lot of areas of life, also within the church. People who volunteer within the church, if it doesn't spark joy, then moving on to something else. And so seeing that is a trend that we've seen throughout the workforce, but then also in faith communities and just life in general. When things get hard, they don't necessarily have the grit to know what to do when life gets hard. Some of that is, I think, my older sister. I'm the second of four, and I'll talk quite a bit about my family. My older sister, she's about 2.5 years older than me, and she has three kids. Ages, they'll be 9 and 6 this summer. she's talked about, you know, it's a well-known term of the helicopter parent, kind of hovering over, making sure that everything is going good for their kid. Now it's no longer the helicopter parent, but the lawnmower, where they're paving the way for their student, making sure everything is cleared out of the way, to make sure they have everything that they need. So again, seeing that trend of, yeah, the lawnmower, I thought that was very clever. But millennials and Gen Zers have grown up in a world where they will get an award for participating. Yep. And so that has built in a mindset of, if I'm not the first one succeeding, if I'm not getting an award for it, then I'm going to move on to something else so that I can get an award over here. And because of that, I think we're seeing you don't get an award just for participating in life or in the workforce. And so when they're not getting the trophy and the ribbon and the participation award in their workforce or in life, they move on to find it somewhere else. And so realizing that the award, that everyone is unique, you know, we're all unique just like everyone else, well, that's kind of the opposite of being unique. But then also the participation award is starting to really play into a lack of perseverance in some other ways too. So a little bit about those different generations, how they built on each other. Many times that the next generation is trying to do the opposite. They kind of want to be their own thing. So in some ways they rebel in their young adult years and adolescent years to be different than their generation that preceded them. And so what's interesting is to kind of watch and see what is a Gen Zer is going to, how are they going to want to be different than the millennials? A hypothesis is there might be a time where someone where they may want to not be as connected to the world. The amount of information and social media that's so easily accessible, it would be really interesting to see if they take a turn to going back to handwritten letters and communication that's a little bit more personal, and recognizing that the whole friend category is not actual friends, and that they feel very connected to the world, but also are extremely lonely. It's going to be really interesting to see as the years go on how they're going to shift away from some of the trends of the millennial generation. So a little too soon to tell for the time being. All right, so in looking at the different generations, with millennials and Gen Zers making up the bulk of the current young adult population, adolescence precedes young adulthood. And so adolescere is Latin for to grow to maturity. So we have a process of adolescent years as a way of saying you're no longer a child, but you're not yet an adult. It's the process of becoming an adult, to grow to maturity. And so adolescence starts in puberty, and then biology, your body just kickstarts into, I'm gonna grow to become an adult now. And then it ends, and this is an unfortunate thing, it ends in culture when we define adolescence is over and adulthood begins. And that is shaped in culture and in the family. And we don't necessarily have a memory marker of saying this is when you're now an adult. Other cultures do. And I think there's a lot that we could learn from other cultures of, this is what it means to become a man, this is what it becomes to be a woman, and to be accepted in culture as that. We don't really have that in America. Instead, we've just titled it extended adolescence, and then said, let's just create a whole new term, like young adulthood. You're not an adult, but you're a young adult, and how patronizing is that? And so the confusion of adolescence, it hasn't always been that way, for there to be a very long standing gap between childhood to adulthood. Puberty back in before the 1900s, puberty began at age 14, and then adulthood would begin at age 16. And so there was a year and a half gap where there was a little bit of time for them to grow out of being considered a child to being an adult. We don't consider 16-year-olds adults in today's world. In 1970, puberty would begin around age 13, and then your adulthood would begin at around age 18. I think a lot of that had to do with the wars going on and when you would be able to be drafted. And so that was about a 5-year gap of, okay, adolescence, high school, becoming an adult. Now, back in 2012, so even 7 years ago, puberty is beginning around 11, which is interesting to see that puberty is starting earlier and earlier. We don't necessarily know why that might be. It could be diet, it could be the influx of sexual activity, but puberty is beginning earlier and earlier. So we have campers at Redwood and Day Camp who are already in puberty. It's not just in the youth programs. Puberty is kickstarting earlier. There's a lot of research out there of trying to understand why that might be. And then the adulthood, back in 2012, it said it would be the mid-20s. They didn't even define when, just mid. How lazy are we in the mid-20s? And so back in 2012, it was saying that adolescence is now 15 years. If you start puberty at 11, but then you're not considered an adult until your mid-20s, like 27, that is a very long time to be in the process of maturing as an adolescent. And so the question of when do we become adults? On an aspirin bottle, an adult dosage is 12. The DMV, it's 16 when you get your driver's license. Alcohol is 21. Movie theater, you have to be 13 or 17 based on what rating you're going to go see. For voting, it's 18 years old. To rent a car is 25. To rent a hotel room is 16 years old. To serve in the military is 18. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It might be more like based on like states, but there are some. You can get a hotel room at age 16. Yes. Yeah. So that's a way you can tie that up. But to fly as an adult, you have to be 2 years old. So you can see where there's the confusion of everything, even just in like in marketing and in when you're able to purchase different things. The age range is very different, and so it's added to the confusion of when do I become an adult, when that for some to fly, that's 2 years old, and then for others to rent a car, it's 25. So within adolescence, in these many, many years, there's the early stages, the mid stages, and the late stages. We break that up to realize, okay, from puberty, when that starts and you're growing out of your childhood into young adulthood, there's these different stages. Most of the time, they're grouped in what we would consider junior high mentality, high school, and then college, and then kind of out of college as well. And so the goal of all of this is to gain one, maturity, but then also to gain some individuation of saying, I was born in this family, and I'm going to start to become responsible for myself. What does that process look like? So individuation, to be responsible for yourself apart from your family. Doesn't need to mean that you need to disown your family and run away from them, but to recognize that you are now an individual that is tied to your family, but you're responsible for yourself. So the biggest questions that in the process of adolescence that they're asking are these three. It's identity, who am I? Autonomy, what makes me unique and what do I have to offer to the world? And then affinity, to whom or to what do I want to belong? And so junior high school, young adults, they're all asking this question. I think the identity question is more of a lifelong journey, especially as followers of Jesus, of how do we grow in our identity and grow as different seasons of life continue. But for junior high school and young adults, those are the three main questions that they're asking. And so for our youth programs here at camp, we point to how can we answer these questions for students in light of the gospel. And so all of our themes will really look at how can we point them to answering questions of their identity, their autonomy, and affinity. How can we answer those in what the Bible says to them? So a number of years ago, there's a theme up at Ponderosa called Upside Down. And it was the truth to live like you belong to another world. And it was rooted in Philippians 3:20, where it says, we are citizens of another kingdom, and we eagerly await a savior from there. And so the entire week was built around this passage in Philippians saying, we belong to that kingdom. We live here, so how can we live like we belong to another world? How does that affect our identity, but then also our affinity? So answering some of those questions in light of what the gospel says. Another interesting thing that happens within these stages is that it mirrors another stage of life that we've already gone through. And so going through puberty is the second most traumatic growth that your body will experience in life. The first one being when you're born, to then when you're growing to be a two-year-old. There's a lot of immediate growth between someone being born to then at 3 months, 6 months, all of the different stages, to then them learning how to walk. That's a really big traumatic in the sense of it's an extreme amount of growth all at one time. And then round two happens when we experience puberty. And all of a sudden, we start growing taller, our bodies change, our voices deepen. Everyone experiences puberty in different ways and at a different age, but it's a very, in some ways, traumatic experience in our body of change happening very, very quickly. And so in a 0 to a 2-year-old has very similar traits to a junior higher. Okay? Bear with me in this. Same with a 3 to 7-year-old matches some traits of a high school student, and then an 8 to a 10-year-old matches some traits of a college student. So I do this training for our youth staff here at Conference Center as well as at Ponderosa to help them understand while also knowing it does not mean that we treat our junior hires like they're toddlers. That's not the goal. We don't want to be patronizing to them, but to recognize that they're experiencing their world in a similar way, in a new way, that they did when they were toddlers trying to learn how to walk. And so it's called the sampling phase. And so a 0 to 2-year-old is experiencing their world sampling everything, putting everything in their mouth. My niece, when she was in the sampling stage, was like going up to a light socket and like licking it because she was, we grabbed her. I'm like, no, Callie, you can't do that. It's a sampling stage. For junior hires, they experience it in a way where all of a sudden their bodies are different and they don't necessarily know what to do with their new bodies. When I was going through puberty, I shot up to be this tall in 7th or 8th grade. And I had grown up playing soccer, and there was a very short window of time where I could not stay on my feet. And this game that I knew how to play and was, you know, had a lot of experience in, I was tripping over my feet and couldn't put one foot in front of the other. And my coach and my parents were like, Kels, what, just tie your cleats, like what's going on? And I would literally take a step and then just fall over. And it was because I wasn't used to doing all of these movements from a new perspective and a new body. In working with junior hires, there was one instance up at Ponderosa where a student had eaten a poisonous plant up there. And my previous boss, Charlie, he was on the phone with like UC Davis Medical Center just trying to figure out how to identify this plant. And the student was having a very allergic reaction, blisters in his mouth, just like poor guy. And so he's a junior high student, and my boss asked him, like, was everything okay? Were you dared to do this? Was there any type of bullying? Like, are you not getting enough food here that you're eating the plants? And so he's just asking, like, why did you do this? And he was like, that seemed like a good idea. And so junior hires are not dumb. They are smart. But they are in a spot where they're trying to figure out the world that they live in and the new body that they're not used to, and it's different smells, and there's weird hair, and it's just like, they're just trying to figure out, how to manage in the world in a very new way. For then 3 to 7-year-olds, they're in the testing phase, where they're asking why to everything. They're just trying to understand the world. And so, again, with my other niece, Kimball, when she was about 3 or 4, we were watching a TV show, and she was asking why to literally everything. It was, why is the princess doing that? Why is she running away? Why is her hair blonde? She was asking why to everything, and I was like, dude, Kimball, just chill. And maybe just watch the show, and you'll figure out all these things. But they're asking why to everything. They're trying to understand. They're testing. They're trying to better understand the world that they're living in. And then in high school, we repeat that. Or it's a little bit more of the challenging testing than maybe some 3 to 7-year-olds. But they're trying to understand, again, how does the world work? And they're testing you. They're testing their parents. They're testing their friends. They're testing their school teachers. They're asking why and challenging, why should I do this? Prove to me why this is. And so they're testing to figure out what are the constraints within the world, the boundaries. And with high school students that I work with, it's really interesting to see them the first couple of days of camp because I get a lot of this. Prove to me why I should be here. And oftentimes I'll see them, and it's like you can see that they're kind of tapping along. It's like they want to participate. They're like, okay, that actually looks kind of fun. I kind of want to do it. But they're also testing to see, like, okay, who else in here am I going to be made fun of? And then as they acclimate to being at camp, you can see that they start to let their walls down a little bit. But they're also testing to see, are you really going to be true to who you are, be true to what you're saying? Are you going to be true to your word? And especially here at camp, where some of them may not necessarily know a whole lot about Jesus, or I've been invited by a friend, they're testing, okay, you say that God loves me and you say that you care about me, prove it when I do this. And so there's a lot of really testing to say, are you going to actually follow through? High school students live in a systematic abandonment, either by their friends, by family, by people who are just like over their testing phase and are just like, you're just too difficult right now. So they live in a world of systematic abandonment, and so they're testing when they meet other people. Within sampling and testing, it's a lot of the trying on different hats. I see this even just within a week of students. They're trying on different hats to see, okay, do I like how this fits? Does this feel like me? Trying to figure out who I am. And they're trying on different personas, different personalities, different things to be involved with, different affinity groups, to then better understand what fits for them, what they like, and what feels natural to who they know they are to be and who they're trying to be. But then they're also watching to see how other people respond to them. Is this going to be accepted? Do I like how this feels? Do the people that I'm attracted to, are they going to be attracted to me? What's the response that I get from adults? They're testing out to try to figure out who they want to be. And sometimes within 1 week, a student will be one way one day, and then a couple days later be completely the opposite. And they're just trying, it's like they're trying on different clothes to see what ones fit, but they're doing that with their personality. And they're seeing, they're testing out the waters. And then last, 8 to 10-year-olds are in the concluding phase. And so 8 to 10-year-olds, I think, are some of the most confident people on the planet. Yes. Yeah, they know how the world works. Yes. And they're like, this is how it is. I know how the world works. Yep. I know I'm going to be the president of the U.S. one day. I'm going to go be an astronaut in space. Like, they just know, and they're very confident. And they've made conclusions about, all right, I've sampled the world. I know my place in it. I've tested it. I've made some conclusions. So at 8 to 10-year-olds, that's where they're at. And then puberty hits. And all of a sudden, everything, those very confident sixth graders are now the terrified and insecure seventh graders going into middle school. And so in the same way, college students, after they've kind of exited out of high school, they start the concluding phase. So young adults are in the concluding phase of, I've tested the waters, I've kind of experienced who I want to be, I'm still kind of taking that away into college, and now I'm going to make some conclusions. And so to be transparent, some of the most frustrating conversations I've had is not with the junior hires or the really rebellious high school students that I work with. Oftentimes it's with some of the young adults who, and this is what I say to summer staff, because I'll say to them, like, sometimes it's with you. It's the most frustrating part of my job is to have some conversations with you. And the reason for that is because it's very apparent when you are deep in the concluding stage. And it's the, I've spent 6 months away at college and I've taken this communications class, and so I know a lot about this topic, and if anyone wants to like learn a little bit from me, I'm like an expert in this, literally. And I just kind of stand there, I just kind of smile, I'm like, all right. And so what I say to them, I say, it's good, you need to make conclusions, to make conclusions of who you want to be, how you want to live in this world, what you're going to offer the world. But here's the key, stay teachable. You will never fully arrive, you will always have more to learn. So make conclusions while being very teachable to learn more. Because oftentimes in those conversations with some of those summer staffers, I'll then think, all right, how about you come back and have this conversation with me again 6 months after you graduate, and you're in the workforce, and you're trying to find rent, and you're realizing, oh, maybe I don't have it all figured out. But I remember being 19 and thinking, when I graduate from college, and this is interesting, it's actually, I can't remember the phrase of it, but it's a specific stage in college that most college students will experience where they have this moment of, at some point, I am going to have it all figured out. And it's a very brief window, but I remember going through it, and I remember my freshman year thinking, all right, I have these 4 years. At the end of my 4 years, I'm going to know exactly how I want to vote and what political party I'm going to be affiliated with. I'm going to know exactly what I think about these different theological issues. I'm going to have, you know, this much money saved up and know how to spend it. I'm going to have a budget. I had my entire life planned out so that at 22, I would never have to learn anything ever again. Right? But at 19, I thought, all right, these are my windows of years to really have everything planned out for the rest of my life. And I'll be all set. And it made total sense in my mind. that is what's going to happen. And so then 3.5 years later, I'm walking across the stage to get my diploma, and I'm like, oh no, I have way more questions than I did at 19. And going to a Christian school, it's a kind of a tangent, that I think college is a necessary time to really figure out your faith, absolutely. But the college that I went to, as much as I love it, it helped deconstruct my faith, but not really point me to the tools to put it back together. And so I was very grateful that I came to Mount Hermon right afterwards, and then I started the intern program because I was in a community where I had to wrestle with that. It wasn't something where I was going to, I've talked to a lot of people who, they don't want to abandon their faith, but they don't know what to do with it after college. And so they put it up on a shelf thinking, I'll figure this out later. Or when I become a parent and I need to start taking my kids to church, I'll figure it out then. And so I've seen a lot of young adults move away from the church, not because they're abandoning Jesus, but they just don't know what to do with some of these big questions that they have. And I felt that myself, of I just have all of these building blocks that are strewn on the ground now, and I know that I believe in God, and I know that I want to follow Jesus. I just don't know answers to some of these big questions, and I don't know who to go to help me put these back together. And so at 22, I left college with way more questions than I had answers, but at 19, I thought, no, I'm going to know everything by the time that I graduate. So some of the things with junior hires, they're asking, what are we doing? For high schoolers, they're getting a lot of meaning out of relationships, and so everything that's important to them is who's going to be there. So we do a lot of our planning for the youth programs based on, for junior hires, give them a lot of activities, and they're asking, what are we doing next? And keep them going. For high school, give some free time for them to get to know each other and build some activities around like shared interests and things like that. For college and for young adults, everything is, meaning is around purpose and significance. Young adults want to be significant. They want to have a purpose in this world, and they are like ready to be given a spot to be able to live some of those things out. So they're asking a lot of why questions. Why are these things important? And wanting to develop meaning, because it's essential for them. A couple books that have really helped, and I use them within the intern program as well. One is called The Defining Decade, and it's by, her name is Dr. Meg Jay. She has a TED Talk that's basically like a 40-minute version of her whole book. I don't necessarily know what her theological views are. I've heard from some people that she's a Christian, but she doesn't write this book necessarily from a Christian perspective. But she has done a lot of research to better understand 20-year-olds and how many of them in today's world are thinking, I'll deal with that in my 30s. And so I'll settle down in my 30s. I'll get my dream job in my 30s. So my 20s are for me just to have fun, or for me to make money but not do anything to establish any work capital. They expect their dream job to just fall into their lap rather than taking the unpaid internship that's gonna build towards it. And so Defining Decade is a great one of looking at work, at relationships, and then the brain and the body and how your brain is still developing until you're 25. And so how in our 20s, rather than putting that off to our 30s, she gives a lot of research realizing that many 30-year-olds or 30-plus-year-olds are then coming to her offices and saying, I now am seeing everyone settling down or moving in their career, and I feel behind. And it's because I didn't use my 20s well in preparing for my 30s. So it's a great book. We've worked through a lot of that with our interns as well. Another one that's not necessarily geared towards young adults, but I think it's just a good life one, is called Extreme Ownership. And it's written by two Navy SEALs, Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. And so they write, I always have to kind of mention this, they write from a military perspective, but it's not a military book. It's not a book about war. They write from their experience as Navy SEALs in a war in Afghanistan. So there are some heavier topics that they cover and just what their experience was. But they talk a lot about what personal leadership and what does it look like to take ownership of your life. And so they use their experience as Navy SEALs. It's not gratuitous, but they are honest in some of the things that they've experienced. But they use that of the personal leadership and ownership that they experience on the battlefield and saying those same principles apply to business and apply to just life. And so they do a good job of transitioning that to like practical day-to-day. But I really think that ownership is a key piece of the term adulting Like, I just don't want to adult today. Like, what does that mean? Like, you don't want to be an adult? Or like, I'm trying to figure out this whole adulting thing. I'm like, all right, we've like even just developed a phrase of like trying to live as an adult of like, I'm just adulting right now. Interesting. And so I think a key piece of that, as I've been reading Extreme Ownership and these different leadership books, is I think that piece of ownership, taking responsibility for yourself, taking responsibility for like everything within your care, I think that's a missing piece that we don't talk about enough when we talk about becoming an adult. And I think many young adults are trying to figure out how to be adults, but aren't necessarily taking the responsibility piece or taking the ownership of what can I do. They're waiting for it to be handed to them. But like, what can I do to take ownership of my life, to take ownership of what career I want to be invested in, even when it means taking the unpaid internship rather than making a lot of money working at a restaurant or a coffee shop or something. Not that those things are bad, but just looking at how am I going to work myself to where I want to be if I'm not taking ownership for where I am currently. Again, my parents, so I'm the second of four. I have an older sister who's married with three kids, two nephews older than me. There's myself, there's my younger brother, who's about 3.5 years younger than me. He's in the military. And then my youngest sister, who's 27, she's actually working at Redwood. She's worked there for many, many years, but she's been an international teacher. My parents have said that, you know, all of us, all four of us, are very, very different from each other. And share some traits with each other, but have lived our lives very differently. And my parents have said that our high school years were hard. There were a lot of sleepless nights that my parents experienced with the different things that we were each going through when we were in high school. But my mom has said, man, those 20s though. There was at one point, all four of us were in our 20s. And so they had from 29, 30, all the way down to like 20 in just what our span was. And my mom has said that has been the hardest as a parent to walk with you guys in, because as a kid to my parents, I am always their child, but I am no longer a child's age. And so for my parents, they recognize you will always be our children, but you're now adults, and we have to let you be adults. And my mom has expressed it feels like her heart is literally walking around the world. And that's my siblings and I, and she's like, it is so difficult when your heart is literally walking around and there's nothing that I can necessarily do other than offer you advice, but you're the adult and now you have to make your own choices. So she has said that it has been a very, very difficult, even more difficult than the teenage years that we went through. I know. So I don't know if that's offering any hope or any insight. But here's one of the things, I know, I realize I'm not, I know, I know my parents, they were here last week, and they were like, so when we're here week four, can we come to your seminar? And I'm like, if you want to, but they definitely have way more experience of being the parent perspective than obviously myself. One of the things I remember in this moment with my mom, it was a number of years ago. I have a close relationship with my parents, which I'm really grateful for. And I was visiting them, and for some reason, like something from the DMV or the car payment, something had been delivered to their house rather than to mine. And I was behind on paying for something related to my car. And so it was gonna result in a fine. And so while I was spending quite a bit of time at my parents' house, my mom was saying like, hey Kels, do you want me to do anything to like help with this? I can take it over like to the post office to mail it. And I kept being like, Mom, I'll take care of it. Mom, I'll take care of it. And she kept bringing it up. And so I was starting to get frustrated. And I was thinking like, I manage all my finances and all my mail and all my bills. I do that like on a daily and monthly basis. But just because I'm at home and you're seeing it, I felt like she was encroaching on. I was like, just let me take care of it myself, and please stop trying to take care of it for me. And so I was starting to get frustrated, and I realized I need to tell her why I'm frustrated, rather than just like showing her that I'm frustrated. So it took a conversation, and I said, "Mom, I'm starting to feel frustrated. I feel like I'm an adult. Let me be an adult. And if it results in me paying a fine, then maybe that's how I have to learn." And I said, "But please, like, I'm a responsible adult, even though I'm not right now, but I am a responsible adult. And I feel like you're not, like, letting me be a responsible adult, that you're trying to take care of these things. I'm no longer a kid. Let me take care of it myself." And my mom is very, very gracious. And so she heard, she's like, "All right, you're right. You are an adult. I'm going to need to let you also suffer the consequences of the choices that you make." And she said, "But Kels, I just wonder if maybe you'll think differently when you have a kid one day and they're, you know, saying the same thing to you." And so it was a good moment for me to, one, to express to my mom, rather than just like act out of frustration or go tell my friends, "Oh, I'm frustrated at my parents," but to say, like, okay, I need to have, as an adult, part of being an adult is in having good conversations with people. And so I went and had a conversation with my mom. I think that's a huge part that's necessary for young adults to engage with their parents in good conversations, even when there's disagreement. But then I also had a moment where I said, yeah, she's right. She has a perspective that I don't have, and it's good for me to express my frustration to her, but I also need to realize I don't know what it's like to be her. And I don't know what it's like for a parent to have, you know, literally taking care of this little human for so many years, and then to let them go and to still be involved in their lives, but in a very different way. I don't know what that is like, and I imagine that that is very, very difficult. And so I've kept that to heart of when my mom is, it's weighing heavily on her, the things that myself and my siblings are going through. I'm like, well, yeah, because she's always going to be my mom, no matter what age I am, and she's taken care of me for so many years, majority of my life, that this is a hard process for them just as much as it is for me. So in young adults trying to gain their independence and to become their own people, you can't choose what family you were born to, but they can choose what family they want to be part of, the family that they want to start. So they do choose their family in some ways. That is a hard process on either side, and I really think the key part is engaging conversations and talking with each other and expressing when we feel frustrated, but also being open that we have different perspectives than each other. Also within a family, I spent a number of years seeing a counselor. It was probably one of the best things I did in my young adult years, was processing a lot of things with a Christian counselor. People have different views on therapy and counseling sessions and things like that, so I totally get that. But that was one thing that was really good for me. I went and saw a counselor for a number of years and processed a lot of things. And something that she pointed out was how, as a family, you develop how to do this dance with each other. And everyone knows their part, and everyone knows how to do the dance with each other. But then as the siblings or as the kids are starting to grow up, they may want to do the dance a little differently. And that requires everyone to relearn the dance, but in a new way. And it takes time, and it might feel awkward, and it takes time to better understand it. And in some ways, you have to do that every time that there's a new adult that's added to it. And so there was one, a number of years ago, it was while I was in counseling, there was a family member who was going to come live with my family. And I didn't want them to, and it wasn't based on anything that had happened in the past. It was more of, there was just some contentious understandings of each other, but again, there's no crime committed to myself or my siblings. There wasn't any lack of safety in their home. It was more of, I just was having a hard time knowing that this family member was going to come live at my parents. And so we were, you know, cleaning out our childhood rooms to, you know, make space and all of this, and was just processing a lot of our whole family dynamic, but then also now having that affect, you know, our immediate family with the new family member coming to live with us. And so I remember thinking, I need to talk to my parents about this. And so I started the conversation with my mom. I was emotional because it was an emotional time in our family, and said, I know that this is a decision that you and Dad are making, but I'm having a really hard time. And because I'm in the same boat as you guys, it's affecting me too. And I don't want this, and yet it's affecting me. And so my mom was like, Kels, that's a great point. She brought my dad in, and we had a kind of a milestone conversation for my relationship with them, because it felt like I was no longer at the kids' table, but had been kind of inserted myself saying, I want a seat at the adult table now, not just during the holidays, but also just in life. And it means that everyone has to kind of scooch over so that you can create more space at the adult table. And for all of my siblings and cousins, we all kind of went through that around the same time. And it was a really good conversation with my parents. That family member, you know, came to live with them, but I was able to express that to my parents, and I still had a choice in how much I wanted to go home, and I chose to continue going home as often as I normally would. And looking back on it, it was a necessary thing that I was processing of everything going on with our family. But man, my parents were acting like Jesus in that moment of opening up their home to let this family member come and stay with them. And I needed, in my own growth, to process why I didn't want that and what it was going to do in my own adult years. But it was really a key conversation for me to have with my parents of things that they had experienced with their family and extended families for so many years that I had just never really known as a kid, to then all of a sudden be learning, oh, this is what our family dynamic looks like, and to now be an adult, kind of figuring all of those things out. And so any time that another kind of young adult to an adult is relearning the dance with their whole family, it takes everyone to be a little flexible, to be patient, to have some understanding. My youngest sister, who's working at Redwood, she was a baby of the family, so she literally got carted to every gymnastics and ballet and soccer game, and she was just the tag-along to everything that we did, having three older siblings, and she was always known as, you know, any of our younger siblings. And so when she went to college and then was getting her teaching credential and then was teaching in Rwanda and in Venezuela and kind of establishing, like, who she wanted to be as an adult and what she was passionate about, there would be so many times that we were so used to just having conversations around the table, and all of a sudden she would speak up to, like, give her opinion or to disagree. And all of us would be just a little surprised of, like, oh, there's another person at the table. And we needed to give her space to be the person that she was going to be becoming. And we had to kind of relearn what our family dynamic was going to be with her growing into adulthood, then with my sister getting married, and now having grandkids. Like, we always have to kind of relearn this dance together. And I think it just takes a lot of ownership and takes a lot of communication and to be able to openly engage with each other through the process of becoming an adult. I think, and I'll open it up to some questions as well. I know it was just a lot of information, a lot of different thoughts, and so I'll share kind of some last remarks at the end, but what questions do you guys have for me? Again, I'm not an expert, but anything I can offer to help. What questions do you have? Yeah?
Rites of passage.
Yes. Yeah. 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 That's a great point. I'll ask summer staff in the room, how many of you feel like an adult? And some of them will kind of raise their hand. Most of them will be like, this or do this. And I'm like, you're a half adult? What does that mean? And so I ask them, what do you guys think make you an adult? And a lot of times it has to do with financial sustainability, owning a home, being married, any of these other kind of like mile markers. So I think setting that early of setting what do you want, like to you, what does it mean to be an adult, and how would you want to set up, yeah, as a parent, I think to set up with your child, so that they know as they're moving towards adulthood, what are going to be some of the rite of passage that you want to do with them. One, it was a very simple one, but one that made me feel like I was moving towards adulthood, was after I got my internship here and I was going to start receiving a paycheck, I went home to visit my parents, and my mom took me around to all of the places, like the phone store and AAA car insurance. And so she put everything in my name and then with my with like my bank account and my card, so that it was like, all right, you now have a job, so you're going to start paying for these things. And so it was right after college, but it was like a moment where we like drove around my hometown to go to all these places and to kind of put everything in order financially so that I needed to start paying for that. Yeah. 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 Because I think even in this room, I think everyone might have different definitions of what it means to be an adult. And so it'd be for you as parents of currently having responsibility of your students, knowing that at some point you'll be handing them off to the world, what would you want to set as a rite of passage to bring them into adulthood? But I think a ceremony type of celebration of a rite of passage is big, because I think that that also communicates, and I think that's a piece that we're missing right now in culture. So, other questions? Yeah, that's a great question. I was at a conference once and they had a poll, I think it's a Gallup poll, and it was, they asked, I think high school students, how many of them actually believe by a certain age that they will be famous, that they will have some type of following, influencers, that they will be some type of famous. And it was a very, very high percentage that no, at some point I'm going to be famous and I have a following and I have an audience. So very interesting narcissistic culture. The millennials are also considered the me generation because of kind of that mindset of people are looking at me and I have a following and I have an audience. I think you're spot on with wanting experience, and I think it really fits in, I'll settle down in my 30s. And I'm going to focus on my career first. And then maybe get married and then start having kids. And I think that's something that she talks a lot about in Defining Decade, of saying many people are thinking, oh, I'll for sure be able to have kids after I've established my career, and then realizing that by a certain age, they may no longer be able to have kids. But they see in the tabloids people who are 50 having these miracle twins, but not knowing the amount of money or the process to make that actually happen. But you just see a tabloid, and then think like, oh, I'll be able to wait until I'm 50 to get married and have kids so I can have it all. And realizing that many 20-year-olds who think in their 30s and 40s they'll have it all, then get to being 30 or 40 and realize they don't, and they have a lot of regret. And so that's something that she talks quite a bit about, of what does it look like to be preparing for your 30s and 40s rather than trying to backtrack and realizing that you might be too late if those are things that you want. So. Yeah, I think the, especially with finances, I think a lot of millennials just assume that they'll never be out of debt, that they'll maybe be able to pay off their student loans, but so far out, and realizing that, like, why try to pay any of this off when, or buy a home when I can rent? I think finances look really different between the millennial generation and then the Gen Z generation coming in. So, yeah. Yeah.
Here's one I think.
Yeah, that is a great question. Again, I say to parents, I'm like, I have them for a week, you have them the other 51, and then for years. And so, you know, I think, you know, I'll see that sometimes with students when they say a lot of things, they talk a big talk. And I kind of keep in mind the testing of how much of this is you're testing to see what my reaction is going to be. And if I say something foul, or if I say something obnoxious, are you still going to reach out to me? Are you still going to say that I have a place to be able to be in your home or to be welcome at church or any of those things? So I think we see that with students, of there are going to be some behaviors that are going to impact others in a harmful way. That is never okay. And so, like, one of our rules is to respect each other and respect the program. And, like, if you're not going to show respect, we'll try again maybe next year. And so we establish the boundaries of, like, these are things that are going to be okay, and these are things that are going to be not okay. And so when students say an offensive comment, we'll still comment on it. I'm like, hey, that's not showing respect to the people next to you. So let's try this again and have that conversation. But then also, even as we're sending students away from camp, saying these are the things that were not okay here, and we really want to try again maybe next year, but we really want you to be here. You have a place here, we want you here, but we need to also establish the parameters of what's okay and what's not. So within, outside of the context of camp, of thinking, how do we best communicate, even in their testing stage, of just like saying things that are really hard to hear, how to let them know, like, hey, I don't agree with that, or hey, that's not okay if you make a comment about somebody like that, but I still want you to be here. I still want you to, you know, as much as it's safe to your daughter, letting them know that that's not going to push you away from engaging with them. There have been times that I've sat with summer staff, and, you know, a summer staffer will be saying, like, man, I'm just having a really hard time with this student in my small group. I don't think that they're getting anything that I'm saying to them. They seem to be only here because they're attracted to some boy or girl here. And I've had other summer staff raise their hands and say, that was me at camp. So just 7 years ago, I was that student. And if only my counselors could know now that I was getting it, that I was watching them, that I was picking up, and they had a bigger impact than I think they'll ever know. I don't know if that helps at all, but okay. Yes?
Real quick, in this.
Yeah. You know, I definitely do know of some people, and so would love to connect you with them who have gone through split families, as well as where the other member, the other parent, and their influence with their kids. Let me connect you with one of them. I don't think he'd mind me sharing. It's Dave Burns, our director of adult ministry. And I think he has a seminar that talks about blended families, but I don't think he would mind that I've shared that. And so let me connect you with him, because he'd be able to speak from, I think, that perspective, and especially being a parent. And he has a lot of kids, biological kids, and now extended family kids as well, and marriage, and how the whole family has continued to grow together. So let me connect you with him. He'd probably have much more wisdom than I would have. So, yeah. Then one last question, and then I know we have lunch. Did you have a question, or? Okay. Yeah, I'll stay behind because I know that we're getting close to lunch, so I'll stay behind. But one thing that I often will tell my parents that I remind them of many people will say, like, oh my gosh, the current youth that are in youth group, but then also the college students and the young adults. And I sense at times a lot of fear from people of, like, what is a church going to look like in 10, 20 years, where these current young adults or the high school students are going to then be growing into leadership positions within the church. What is a church going to look like? And I have, again, a limited view of what I see here at camp, but I see the students who come, the high school students, and I just wish sometimes that people could see, like, what we get to see in the Meadow View and the Forest View rooms of the Conference Center Youth, as well as a forum up at Ponderosa. And it is alive with students who are worshiping Jesus and with young adults who are here to serve and to point students to Jesus as they have been pointed to. And so I keep that in my mind of, like, you know what? The world is a broken, awful place, and it always has been since the garden. But there are people, they might be few, but they are fierce, and they really love Jesus, and the church is in good hands, because one, God's got it covered, and two, there's a lot of incredible people who are pointing current students and young adults to Jesus, and to let them lead and to see what God's going to do with them. So I'll stay back for any other questions that you might have, but thanks so much for being here.